The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White. This is the Dolo White Podcast. Real quick, something you probably don't care about and would never catch if I didn't tell you. I say at the beginning of my interview with Alyssa Davies that this is episode 72. It's actually episode 73. I don't know why I care. I don't know why I'm like this, but here we all are. Having said that, financial freedom is something we all aspire to, but few of us know how to actually get there. And there's a lot of things going around social media about what you should be doing with your money. And a lot of these things don't make sense to a lot of us because we were never educated in these areas. And that is okay. My guest today is Alyssa Davies. She is the author of Financial First Aid. She also runs the social media accounts Mixed Up Money, which creates a safe space if you don't know what the hell to do with your money. Again, that's okay. That's why we're here. I don't know what the hell I'm doing with my money, and I'm almost 44 years old. So I feel you. You're not alone. Let's get to it. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Gitti. Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 72 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, author of Financial First Aid, Essential Tools for Confident, Secure Money Management, Alyssa Davies. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
I'm excited to have you on because money is important and we all need to know what to do with the money that we have when it's coming in, to set ourselves up, to set our kids up. So you wrote this book, Financial First Aid. Can you give us kind of like a brief synopsis of the book?
Definitely. So first of all, I'll say the book kind of came to fruition because I have mass amounts of anxiety. So thinking about money used to absolutely terrify me. It was debilitating because I wanted to just avoid what was going on and pretend that the future didn't matter. And so once I finally dove into the world of personal finance, I knew that there was a way to give myself back that control and that sense of power over my money. And that came through having backup plans and through having emergency funds. And so that is what Financial First Aid is all about, is giving yourself the power and the preventative measures you need to kind of stay successful.
I know one of those ways is multiple streams of income. And you hear people talk about that all the time. And it sounds like, oh, I have multiple streams of income. Like it's really easy. But if you're working a full-time job, the last thing you want to do is have to work another stream of income. But there are passive ways to make some money. So let's go through some of that easier ways to make some money that maybe they don't pay what your full-time gig pays, but it helps, right? Every little bit helps.
Oh yeah. Every dollar helps. And yeah, that's totally it. A lot of people assume that multiple streams of income means you have to have multiple jobs. And that's totally not the reality. And a lot of people have more streams of income than they even realize. So one of them is obviously your full-time, which is earned income, but you can also have interest income, which you would have just by having a high yield savings account. So that's two right there. Then if you have an investment account, so if you have a 401k, that's your third stream right there because you're making dividends, you're making capital gains. So pat yourself on the back because you probably already have three streams of income, which is incredible. And you're setting yourself up for success in the future. But yes, other options are, you know, looking at those more less accessible options, but they're still there if you need them, which is having a side hustle or having another passive stream of income, like maybe royalties through having a book, for example, or having an online business where you can sell one product or create one product one time and then continue to sell that product.
Let's really dive deep a little bit. Cause I've heard the term, high yield account. Is that what it was? Okay.
Yes.
Let's break that down. Exactly. What is that? I do pretty well for myself. And I'm like, I've heard it before, but I've never like, you always want to at least act like you know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, high yield account, but break that down. Exactly. What is a high yield savings account? So
for sure. Yeah, no, it's a great question. Like there's no shame and no judgment in my world. So I love when people are just honest and they're like, what does this mean? Because I didn't know what it meant 5 years ago and right. I'm doing okay now. So it helps to ask questions, but yeah, high yield savings account is just where you would put any money that you're saving for an immediate or short-term financial goal. And when I say short term, I mean like by less than 5 years away, because anything longer than that, you'll want to invest your money so that it actually has time to grow. But anything shorter than that, you might need to have it right away. So putting it into an investment account is typically pretty risky. So a high yield savings account is just a safe way to open. It's a free account you can open at your bank today. If you wanted, you could just hop online and save it rather than just keeping your money in your checkings account where it's making nothing. A high yield savings account will actually earn you a tiny bit of interest. It's actually very sad right now because of interest rates are not that great given everything that's happening with our economy, but it's still an option and it's much, much better than just like having it in your checkings account is basically having it underneath your mattress.
Yeah. So you can, in essence, use that savings account like a checking account. Can you, will you have like a debit card? You can just.
Yeah, you can definitely open up your savings account to use, or you can just easily transfer money back and forth between the two because you don't have to pay for that. And that's where I keep my emergency funds is in a high yield savings account because I don't want them to be too accessible because then I'll just spend them on things that aren't actual emergencies. So it's a really good way to compartmentalize your emergency goals or like any of your financial goals.
One thing that one mistake that I made, I've been working in the, for the same company, for the same radio station for 20 years now. And when I was a dumbass 23-year-old, I did not take advantage of the 401k policy. And oh, no. I can't imagine what would be in there right now, 20 years later. But the thing about 401k is that I don't think I understood then was it's basically free money because they're matching up to whatever it is they match. And I think that's something important, especially for kids starting out now. Your company is willing to give you free money. You should take that free money and just put it aside, correct? Please don't
please take that money. But also it's totally fair. Like again, who tells you that? No one's telling you that unless you're asking. And a lot of us don't know which questions to ask when we're 18. But yeah, investing in general is something that I advise every 18-year-old to get informed on immediately because the most valuable asset you have is time. So even though you missed those few years, don't worry about like what could have been because it's too late. So regretting those decisions isn't worth it. It's not worth the energy. But kind of shifting your focus to what can you do now? What can you do today to actually make up for that loss? And there's a lot of ways because I'm the same. I didn't really start investing till I turned 25. So it took me time to get to where I am, but now I know what I need to invest to actually make progress that I want. And that sets me up for the future I need.
Yeah. I see something on the sheet here, how to negotiate for a higher salary. And that really speaks to me because I'm an awful negotiator. So let's get into some of those tips. If you're negotiating your salary, if it's time, yeah, I go contract to contract. And most of the time, I think most of us probably take whatever our companies give us and we don't really fight for a higher salary. Advice, please.
Well, help. First, right off the bat, I can say that you should never accept the first number you're given because most people will come to you expecting you to negotiate. They have buffer in their budget expecting that you'll ask for more. So don't feel bad asking for more because they're hoping that you do negotiate. And if you're a contract worker, you have all the opportunities. So just keep working at it and you'll get better at negotiating. But one thing for sure is that I like to tell people that if you don't feel confident or you don't feel comfortable negotiating, sometimes it helps to pretend that you're negotiating on the behalf of your best friend or like a loved one, because then you're probably going to push with a little bit more confidence than you would if you were just negotiating for yourself. I feel like a lot of us don't think we deserve more when we do. And so giving yourself that mindset shift is really helpful. And also just being prepared with research and the information you need to say like, hey, I've done the research. I've spoken to my peers. I know how much they're making. I know what the industry standard is. And this is what I deserve to make based on market industry right now. So you just have to kind of be prepared with that knowledge so that you can feel more confident. And remember too, the worst they can say is no.
Yeah. Scary stuff right there.
No one likes to hear no.
I see something that says also how to negotiate bills and debt. And I've negotiated some debt before in the past when I was trying to clear up my credit and really got things off. And I have a friend of mine who actually negotiated his student loan debt for pennies on the dollar. Was just like, will you take this? And they were like, yes. And so let's talk about negotiating bills, bills and debt. I didn't know you could negotiate bills. So you're going to enlighten me there. But I know debt is something that if it's been turned over to maybe a collection agency or something like that, sometimes they'll just take whatever you can give them, right?
Yes. At a certain point, lenders just want to be paid. And so it's always worth the ask. Again, it's one of those things where we think that's not possible or we don't have the confidence to just ask. But when you call and say like, hey, I'm struggling financially and I am having a difficult time, even with this interest rate, is there anything we can do to lower the interest rate by a couple of percentage points? Mm. Because that's going to give you a little more wiggle room, a little bit more breathing room for you to actually make progress on your debt rather than just paying the minimum and like barely scraping by. So again, always worth the call. And when it comes to bills too, you can negotiate any bill the same you would your salary. You just have to know what are other people paying, you know, because if I ask my friend what they're paying for their phone bill and we have the same company or provider and I find out they're paying less than me, I'll just call and say, hey, I've done some digging, some research, and a lot of other people I know that use your services are actually paying $5 to $10 less than me on their phone bill. Wow. I'm just curious if there's anything at all you can do for me. Use your manners, of course, because they're real people on the other end of the phone, and that will definitely help. But yeah, if you can save $5 a month, that's a lot of money throughout a year.
You blew my mind. So I could technically call my credit card company right now and be like, hey, can you lower my interest rate? And there's a chance they'll do it.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, this is over. I got to go. I got calls to make. No, kidding, obviously. But I'll ask you this. I like to ask authors this. I'll ask you a two-part question. I'll start. When you first started down this journey of financial independence, financial freedom for yourself, what was the thing that stuck out that kind of blew your mind the most?
Oh, I think just in general, I did not realize how important it was to ask questions. Like we've been talking about this entire call. Like I was so embarrassed and felt so ashamed that I didn't know about money. And then when I started down the path, I started to realize no one knows this stuff.
No,
it's not taught in school. We weren't given this knowledge. Our parents like barely told us any of this stuff. So most of us have learned anything we do with our money the hard way or through behaviors that we've seen other people doing. So that bleeds into our adulthood. And that's how we manage money as adults, is how we learned about it growing up. And a lot of us didn't learn at all.
And so when you were doing research for this book, did you come across any knowledge that kind of blew your mind? That's something that you didn't know when you're doing your research to put this book together. And if so, what would that be?
Honestly, I talked a lot about in one chapter about climate change, which sounds like super heavy, but I did not really think about how much that impacts my financial future. I wasn't thinking that deep into the future and what that might look like for our generation and for the generation after us. And so if anything, I just learned that I'm doing the right things, which is always nice to know that I am prepared for those things and that other people can also achieve that feeling of security, because most people feel like that's not possible.
Right.
And I wanted to, again, give that control back.
Gotcha. I have a 4-year-old daughter and I want to set her up the best I can. So what advice would you give a parent to say, hey, these are the things you need to do to make sure that your kid not only understands money, understands how it works, but it also has some when they turn, you know, a certain age?
Well, the first thing I tell parents is that most of us are concerned immediately when they're born. Like they're born and you're immediately like, oh my gosh, I need to start saving for their college.
Yes.
And something that I've had to tell myself, because there's a lot of obligations when you have kids, is that the number one thing I can do to help set my kid up for success is to actually have my retirement covered. Because if my retirement is not covered, I then become my child's responsibility when they're an adult. And I don't want that for them. So having yourself covered is the first step before you start worrying about saving for their college or saving for like their first car. Make sure that you are really covering yourself, because that is helpful for them. It might feel selfish, but it's the opposite. And then you can definitely approach those other goals next.
I think that one thing that you said there that really triggered something is I believe there are products out there, and when my daughter's 4 now, I should definitely get one of these products, but where you can have some kind of long-term healthcare. So if you're sick, if you need to be in a place where, or if you need to even have, you know, a nurse live in with you or cover shifts or whatever, you have care long-term. Because I mean, how many kids end up having their parents live with them when they get sick? And those things need to be paid off. You can pay those, you know, in advance. That's better for the kid.
Yes. We talk about that in the book too, because there are types of insurance that you can get to protect yourself in those instances, whether it's disability insurance, like say something happens medically that you can no longer work and you still need to provide for your family, or life insurance. Yeah. If there's an unexpected passing away and you need that coverage. So I talk a lot about which types of insurance are the right types and why they're so important.
And you also talk about money and emotion and how they're tied together. So let's get into that a little bit, because I think we've all, unless you're just born extremely privileged, we've all had anxiety around money before, at least a few times, you know, like
yeah.
happens to me a couple times a year. I'm like, shit, how am I gonna make this work? You know? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how money and emotion are tied together.
Yeah. I think I'm actually taking a course right now and it talks a lot about money trauma and how certain things that have happened throughout our lives impact the way that we view money and the way that we use our money. So whether that be you experienced poverty when you were a child, it's a really hard cycle to break. It's a really hard mindset to break because you are constantly living in a state of scarcity in your mind. There will never be enough. And we often just constantly live like when we do have money, we want to spend it because we're worried we're not going to have it next month. And so there's a lot of things that come up from our past that heavily weigh the ways we use money today. And so a lot of it is just like acknowledging what that is for you. Like what part of your childhood or your upbringing has impacted how you use your money. And it's not an easy conversation to have. And no one wants to think about anything that's traumatic that's happened in their past. But if you can kind of start to understand or label those feelings and understand how they impact your money, you'll be much better off knowing that you can actually make a change.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it probably gets handed down generationally too, as well. I mean, when you look at the past yes. generations and things that they went through, be it, you know, the Great Depression or, you know, if you're a person of color, slavery and things of that nature that have been passed down from generation to generation, when it comes around money, there's nothing but anxiety there. And you hear a lot of people say that have come from nothing into millions of dollars. They still have anxiety around money sometimes. You're like, well, how's that possible? It's possible because it's been passed down for years in yeah. the bloodline. Let's talk briefly about bankruptcy and debt consolidation and what to consider with those. I know you touched on that in the book as well.
Yeah, that's a good one too, because again, one of those things where we feel a lot of shame and guilt if we have debt and the forgetfulness, all of a sudden we forget like everyone has debt or has had debt. Even the most wealthy people in the world have debt. But the difference is they use it as a tool, whereas we're using it to get by. And so I like to approach the idea of bankruptcy and debt consolidation as sometimes it's the best choice for you. And that's okay. Those things exist for a reason. And if it's going to help you get on your feet and actually create a financial future that you need, then you should consider it. And that's when maybe you can't sleep at night because your debt is keeping you awake, or the collections agencies will not stop calling you and it's leaving you feeling this constant state of anxiety, or you can't make the minimum payments on your bills. You should speak to someone. It's okay to have that happening in your life. Like I have spoken to so many people who have been in that position and that felt like they couldn't say they need help. And you just have to accept it sometimes. You just have to be okay with asking for help.
And the crazy thing about debt is, the craziest thing to me anyway, and is that I remember when I was trying to get my credit score up, I didn't have a credit card. I didn't really have any debt. I owned a home and had a car loan, and I couldn't get my credit score over 700 because I didn't have enough debt, which you're like, that should be a good thing, but it's... Mm-hmm. The way they rank credit is not.
Yeah,
not a good
the thing. System is so confusing. It's yeah. very confusing.
To say the least.
And it feels like oftentimes that they're setting us up for failure, to be honest. Yeah. And so like, that's why I say, just keep asking and just keep digging, because you're not the only one who feels confused.
All right. I see the last thing before I let you out of here, save and pay off debt at the same time, because it feels like you can do one or the other, but you can't do both. So how do you do both?
Yeah. So this one is where it will start with small. You have to start small. Even if you're putting $10 to $20 away each month into a little side emergency fund, it's necessary, because if your car breaks down tomorrow and you still have to pay the minimum on your debt, then you need that buffer. Otherwise, you're going to derail any progress you're making, and you're going to be stuck in that cycle where you cannot keep getting ahead as far as your debt goes. So it sounds impossible and it might be impossible, but like even $5 a month, just put something aside, because if that is going to be the difference between you making a minimum payment or you like actually being able to pay your bills, it's necessary.
And put it in a high yield account, because now we know what yes. that is. So.
Yes, exactly.
The book is Financial First Aid. Alyssa Davies, thank you so much for coming on today. Can you tell everybody where to find you on social media and things of that nature?
Of course. Thanks for having me. You can find me at mixedupmoney.com or on any social media platform at mixedupmoney.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Alyssa Davies. Follow her on social media at Mixed Up Money. That's her handles for, I believe, everything. And also check out her book, Financial First Aid. Check me out on the gram or Twitter as well at DolaWhite101, DolaWhite101. Don't forget, no matter what platform you're currently listening to this podcast on, make sure you subscribe and follow. Also, make sure if they let you rate and review, you do that. You say some kind things. You give me 5 stars or 5 thumbs up or whatever the hell it is they have. Do the good stuff. If you have anything bad to say to me, you can always DM me. Don't say anything negative in a public space. That's all I ask. That's not too much to ask. Anyway, back next week, brand new episode. Dr. Shell Cashin will come on to talk about racial inequities in housing. So that's going to be a dope episode. It's going to be a little heavy, but it's going to be dope. Check me out next week. Thank you again for checking out the podcast.